Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We've got a wonderful show tonight. It's a little bit different for us. We've got Kavita Shanahan on, and she's going to talk about Shakti Rising, her book, Shakti Rising, Embracing Shadow and Light on the Goddess Path to Wholeness. Very interesting book. Very, very interesting book. And we are just asking you to sit back, relax, get pen and paper, take some notes, okay, because we're going to have some pretty interesting information coming forward. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks that and release the energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. The real question is, are you ready to? And by the way, folks, the BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. My clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, on my website. And again, that's MoniqueChapman.com. We are all driven by an innate sense of lack that leads us to endless seeking. On our search for completion and contentment, we may find ourselves denying shadows within us, those parts of ourselves we deem bad or wrong. Dr. Kavita Shanahan, I'll get that right, is a cardiologist who blends her medical expertise with her knowledge of yoga, tantra, and direct path to help patients discover the end of suffering. And folks, that's what we're looking for, the end of suffering. Now, you can catch Kavita on her website, and that is KavitaMD.com. So that's KavitaMD.com. Welcome, Kavita.
Hi there. Thank you, Monique.
Hey, it is so great having you on. Now, with the Indian names, we've got to say it up front, folks. With the Indian names, I get all tongue twisted. So we're going to rely on Kavita to help us out here as we explore this wonderful book and the processes that she goes through. Now, your book is so wonderful, Shakti Rising, Embracing Shadow and Light on the Goddess Path to Wholeness. You're a cardiologist. You're an excellent doctor. How did you get to the point of writing a book about Shakti Rising?
You know, it's such an interesting question. And this whole thing has come about as a result of my own inner journey and inner exploration. And that is really, I would say, complementary to my medical practice, rather than in opposition. I used to think that the two are separate and they must be kept separate, but I no longer feel that way because, the inner path or the inner journey or the spiritual journey shouldn't really exclude anything in your life. It should encompass everything you do. So, and it does include my medical practice as well. So this book is kind of the amalgamation, or it is the coming together of my own spiritual path over many, many years, and Shakti, or the Divine Feminine, writing this book through me rather than me writing about her. So, so it's just, just how my spiritual path has unfolded, and writing is such a big part of it.
Okay. Well, how important is your spiritual path connected to your medical practice? Because there's so many doctors today that are starting to embrace complementary medicine.
Well, so those are three different things, because my medical practice, in terms of the spiritual journey, has, you know, it's really not at all a problem if somebody is practicing Western medicine or traditional medicine, and they have a spiritual path that is very private and they keep them separate. I know a lot of people that do that. And that's completely fine to do that. And, and this whole inner process, whatever the spiritual path may be, just makes you softer, kinder, changes your perception of the world, of yourself, and of the person that you are treating in front of you. So that's one aspect of it. But in my case, you know, I'm also trained in Ayurveda, and I have a deep interest in the Eastern medical sciences, which are sciences because they have such great logic and method and technique to them, especially Ayurveda. So I do combine Ayurveda with my practice, primarily in terms of prevention and making recommendations for lifestyle choices for my patients. So I definitely do that. But in terms of, the spiritual path, I do also, I teach meditation and I do teach self-inquiry. I have retreats and workshops and so on that I invite patients to come to, because I think that's such an integral part of the healing process. To me, it seems very seamless. It's not a conflict, and it used to be when I first began to integrate things. I felt that it was a conflict, but I no longer feel that way. I think it's a very integral part, and the universe works in such a way that people who are looking for such a thing find me, and so it works out.
Yeah, well, it's always amazing when you're ready for something, you find the right people to help you. Now,
exactly.
Your book is about. Yeah, it's wonderful. Your book is about, working with the different goddess energies, 10 different forms. I'd like to touch on those in a bit. But, what I got from your book, it really comes down to discovering who you are and what do you really want in life. So how do we get to that point of knowing who we are? And then, what do we really want? I mean, because, you'll get up one morning and you want one thing or something else, or you might have a long-term projection of wanting something, but as life goes down its path, sometimes we change.
Yeah. And, that is the fundamental question, I think, that pretty much all of us struggle with, no matter what path or life path or what our culture is or what our background is. It really doesn't matter. That's one thing we all have in common. And this path of Shakti or the Divine Feminine is one of really very incisive and very deep self-discovery. So this is not a superficial kind of feel-good kind of a path, because it does ask for a deep commitment and this kind of a dedication and devotion to wanting to learn our true nature. You know, who am I really, and what makes me tick, and what is this life force that runs in me. And, you know, when we ask, when we start asking these existential questions, the superficial kinds of questions start to fade away. When we kind of apply our mind to ask the most important questions, which is really, why am I here? You know, what is my purpose? I mean, what have I taken this birth now? And you know, mm-hmm. what am I supposed to do? And this isn't a process that kind of you're done with in a day or two. You know, this takes years and years of unraveling, basically, unlearning. It takes years and years because we kind of grow up and we form this image around ourselves or of ourselves based on all kinds of concepts and beliefs and images that we have about ourselves based on our past stories and, you know, what we've been taught by our peers, by our caregivers, and mm-hmm. by society and so on. And so that becomes our identity. You know, we start believing our stories to be who we are. And that becomes very limiting because we are not our stories. And to really unravel that, unlearn that, that is this process of self-discovery that, you know, that is described in the book. And you know, this in terms of your question about what am I supposed to do, and the question about, you know, how come it keeps changing? One day you get up and you say, okay, this is what I want to do. Next day it changes, keeps changing. That's mm-hmm. because we have imbibed others' ideas of who we need to be. And, you know, we kind of form ideas around who we need to be based on, you know, the influence we have from everybody else. You know, I describe this in the book on the chapter on Tara, which is, you know, we kind of give in and surrender to all these voices in our heads, you know, of our parents, what they think we should be, what our siblings think we should be, what our spouses think we should be. So this is why our desires keep shifting, or what we want keeps shifting, because it isn't really authentic to who we are. So, and that takes a lot of commitment and digging to find out, what do I really want, which is not tainted by what everybody else thinks I should want. Because, you know, it's this, if we just watch television for one evening, we are bombarded with what we should want. You know, we should be wanting that car, we should be wanting that makeup, we should be wanting that lifestyle. And only then are you somebody. You know, that's the kind of message that is given to us, whether it's on television or whether it's, you know, social media or anything. And we kind of get swept away in that. And this is why we keep our destiny, so to speak, keeps shifting, because it's not authentic. It's not rooted in our own sitting with who we are. You know, we don't spend the time to just sit and reflect and contemplate and do the work that is necessary in order to figure out, first of all, who am I? In order to know what I want, I should know who I am. And who I am without all those labels of being somebody's daughter, somebody's wife, somebody's this, somebody's that. And once you remove all those labels, what's left? And so when we discover that, then we can say, okay, what's that person, what is that entity wanting to do? And so then we become instruments of the divine. You know, when we empty ourselves of all of that, that's when we can, you know, start to let the divine live through us. And then it all becomes very clear on what I should be doing at any given moment without all the confusion and the noise.
Okay. Well, you know, in your book, you talk about meditation, and I'm a great proponent of meditation, but so many people find that it's so difficult to meditate. At least that's their preconceived notion. How do we, in this age of the internet and social media and everything pulling at our attention, how do we slow down or get into that space where we can go within ourselves to open the door to self-discovery?
Yeah. So, and you're right. You know, a lot of people that I prescribe, I actually prescribe meditation as a prescription in my practice. And I have a meditation course online, which is free. Anybody can sign up. It's the practice that I have, you know, practiced for many years and have taught for many years. It's highly effective, very simple. But the thing is, you know, the expectation that we have around meditation is a problem, because we think that, okay, if I say go meditate, you know, the expectation is suddenly you've never done this in your life and you're going to sit down and your mind is just going to become still. That is never going to happen. You know, that's not meant to. Meditation is not about stilling your mind, and thoughts are not the problem. Those are the kinds of myths that people have around meditation. And it is with a daily committed practice. You know, you do this, sit down and do it as prescribed day in, day out for weeks, months. That's when you would start seeing the effects. You don't see the effects the first time, the second time, the third time, or even the 50th time. You know, this is because, again, it has to do with unlearning. How can the mind be quiet when we can't even predict what our next thought is going to be? You know, we want to control our minds, but not understanding that the mind is what controls us. So it's not going to be so easy to suddenly make the mind your slave when all your life you've been its slave, you know? So it takes patience and persistence and commitment in terms of making the meditation work for us, where finally we have control over our senses, control over our minds, where the mind becomes our servant. We use it when we want to, in the particular way we want to, and when we don't need it, it is quiet. And that happens, but that doesn't happen the first week. It happens over time, and it's a subtle, progressive change. So when people say they can't meditate, I just say, well, you and 7 billion others, because this is the most common problem for everybody. This is not a particular problem for one person, right? This is our problem as the human race. None of us can meditate well. And the more that people say, well, my mind is really busy, I can't meditate, I tell them, you're the perfect person that this meditation is going to be helpful for. If your mind is already quiet, you don't need meditation. But when you do, when it isn't, then it's a sign that you need it.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you were saying that, it brought up a memory for me. When I was much younger, late teens, early 20s, you know, people would say, Monique, what are you thinking about? And I'd say, nothing, because I really wasn't thinking about anything. And I thought that I was defective because something should always be on my mind. And then I got to the point where I was constantly going. And it's like, well, no, this is crazy. So I had to go back to where I had nothing on my mind, because it was just like driving me insane.
I know, exactly, yes. And I think all of us have that. You know, every single one of us have had those experiences of being completely one with the moment. You know, you see something beautiful, or you hear something beautiful, or whatever it may be. You know, all of us have had those moments of absolute stillness. It's just that it's so fleeting and temporary that we don't remember it. And all we can remember is that our minds are always racing. So, and this is why I think meditation is so helpful. And it's different for me in my practice, because I can tell people, well, meditate because your blood pressure is going to come down. And so they have something to look forward to, you know, the blood pressure coming down. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the superficial effects of meditation. But really, the gift of meditation is this inner silence and stillness. Only in that stillness can we do this deep kind of work that Shakti wants us to do for this self-discovery.
Okay. Well, folks, on her website, kavitamd.com, she does have the meditation course. It's the Blissful Meditation Course, and it's 7 lessons. They're pretty short. And, you know, guys, they're going to help you. You're going to be able to improve your immunity. You're going to, as she said, improve your blood pressure, find your inner bliss. If you're having trouble sleeping, you'll be able to sleep. You can reduce that stress. So it's worth the time to invest, because all this time that we're so stressed out and going, at 10,000 miles an hour, you know, it's not working for us. It just adds more stress in our lives, and stress is truly a killer, but we could talk about that later. Folks, we're speaking with Dr. Kavita Shanayan. She is the author of Shakti Rising, Embracing Shadow and Light Goddess Path to Wholeness. You can check her out at our website, and that's kavitamd.com, kavitahamd.com. Kavita, who's Shakti?
Shakti is the divine feminine, as in, so I should back up here and say a little bit more, because you know, the divine has no gender. The divine is neither masculine nor feminine. But the divine has all polarities contained in it. And there is the primordial masculine energy, which is stillness, absolute stillness, that cannot do anything, that doesn't do anything. It's just still awareness or consciousness. And then the divine feminine is the dynamic energy that gives birth to everything that we see. So both are required. You require the stillness, because in the stillness, only in the context of stillness is there movement, and only in the context of the formless is there form. So both are required. The formless is the divine masculine. All forms are the divine feminine. So Shakti is that. She is the creator of everything. So she, unlike us human mothers, or, you know, mothers of the earth that give birth to the child and become separate from the child. So once we give birth, the child has its own identity. We have our own identity, even though we are connected. But that's not how Shakti works. You know, she gives birth and she becomes that. So she gives birth to all the forms, and she becomes that form. So, you know, it is her essence that is our true nature, because she is, you know, she has become all of what we see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what are the 10 forms of the Divine Mother? When I was reading the book, and what really got my attention to have you on the show was, when, as soon as I opened up the book to the first chapter, there was a chapter on Kali. And
yes.
I had a client several years ago who said, Monique, you're just like Kali Ma. And I didn't know who Kali Ma was. And I did some reading, and I'm like, well, okay, maybe. And then I looked at the picture, I'm like, no, that's not me. So talk to us about the different forms of the Divine Mother, if you could share their names and a little bit about each one. And when I looked at Kali, I mean, she had a severed head in one hand and skulls all around her, and she was standing on somebody else. I'm like, oh my goodness. So talk to us about the depictions of the picture and what they truly represent in our shadow or light.
Sure. Yeah, so as I was saying earlier, you know, the divine feminine or Shakti is really all forms, everything that is seen and unseen, all our thought forms, all our subtle forms, everything is Shakti. But there, in one particular spiritual path, 10 of her forms are revered as, and they're known as the Mahavidyas. So Maha means great, Vidya means knowledge or wisdom. So these 10 great goddesses are the goddesses of great cosmic wisdom. And they are known as the Mahavidyas because, you know, just working with one of them opens us to all the others. and opens us to the great secrets of the universe. And that's why they're known as the Mahavidyas. There are several important aspects of the Mahavidyas that differ from all the other forms of Shakti. And in the Mahavidyas, the one thing that they all have in common is they all represent cosmic forces of creation. So, for instance, Kali, the first one, represents time, whereas the fourth Mahavidya, Bhuvaneshwari, she represents space. So each goddess represents one particular aspect of creation. And so that is on the cosmic scale. This is on the cosmic scale that is very hard for us to even imagine. But on the individual scale, within us, each of these goddesses represents both the shadow and the light aspects of who we are. So here the shadow doesn't, the shadow is called that because the shadow is what takes us away from our identity as being divine and keeps us kind of trapped in our limited identity, in our stories, in our past, and where we cannot see that's not who we are. So the shadow aspect of each Mahavidya is one that traps us in that limited identity, whereas the light aspect is what opens us to who we really are, which is undying, eternal bliss consciousness, which is our true nature. So she represents both of that. Each Mahavidya represents a specific aspect of that light and shadow within us. And what is really also one thing that all of these goddesses have in common is that they are not subservient. They're not consorts to male gods. They take center stage. And so the divine masculine is hidden in the iconography, in the imagery, showing us that we get so caught up in the creation that we forget the stillness. Because only in the stillness, as we were discussing about meditation, only in the stillness can we really see who we are. But her maya or her dance is so alluring, and we get so caught up in the drama that we forget him. So her iconography shows that in all of these 10 goddesses. And another thing they all have in common is they all defy what we may think is feminine. So like you were saying with Kali, she's fierce, but so are all the other nine. All of them are fierce. So they're not these demure, goddesses that are defined by men to be goddesses, to have, specific feminine characteristics that somebody, some man has decided this is feminine and this is masculine. They defy all those kinds of definitions of what it means to be feminine. And so that fierceness also in the Mahavidyas, like you were saying, you look at that image and you're thinking, my God. And there is a reason for them being so fierce, because only when we actually work with such a shocking image can we be shocked out of our story into that stillness. So they are meant to be shocking that way. They're meant to really spin us out of our limited stories into our unlimited nature. So that's why they're all very fierce. They don't allow us to be stuck in our limitations. So those are all the things that all of them have in common. And so the 10 of them are, Kali, who represents time, and she's the first in the sequence, because without time, there is no creation. You need one moment to follow another, because without that, there is no life and there is no linearity. So Kali dances in the cemetery. So if you look at her image, she is surrounded by corpses, and she wears a garland of heads, and she bears these various weapons and has this head, in this freshly severed head, in one of her hands. And she's actually dancing on Shiva, who is the divine masculine. So her dance represents time and linear time. And so this whole process of what she is, decapitating is time, basically. It's only when one moment is gone, only then can the next moment come in. And so without death, there can be no life. If we didn't have the sequence of time or of life, life cannot be sustained. You know, death of one moment is necessary for the next one to be born. Similarly, we need to die in order for life to be propagated. So that's what she is representing, the linear timeline. And when we look at her iconography, you know, all the corpses that are around her are representing how we become stuck in time when we live in those past stories that are no longer relevant, and they're dead and gone. The past is dead and gone, but we are still living in that. You know, we're allowing the past to affect how we live now. So that's what she is showing us in her iconography. That's Kali in a nutshell. And her shadow is one of violence. As you can see from her imagery, it's very violent. And everything we see right now going on in the world is really Kali's shadow, you know, whether it's natural disasters or, all the violence that goes on around us, it's really Kali's shadow, because it all comes from being stuck in the past and wanting to take revenge, wanting vengeance, whatever it is, it all comes from believing our past story. And so that's her shadow, where, you know, we become more and more and more stuck as the individual limited being rather than realizing our true nature. And her light, of course, is the diametrically opposite quality, which is radical nonviolence. And we can't realize nonviolence until we step out of time and into this eternal now.
Okay.
And so only then can we see that, you know, only when we are always in the now can we see that neither the past nor the future actually exist. And that's when we are blessed with her grace, where we can go deeper into this process of self-discovery. So that's Kali. And I always like to explain her the most, because most people are familiar with her. Compared to the other nine goddesses. Atara is the second one, and she represents the cosmic vibration, you know, the primordial vibration. Pretty much all fates understand that the word or the primordial vibration is what everything comes from. And so that vibration is represented by Tara. And so she is the second of the goddesses. And the third is Tripura Sundari, or Sundari, who represents will, the power of the will of the divine to create. Because unless there is will for us in our daily lives, you know, for us to even get out of bed in the morning, we need will. We need to want to get out of bed. We need to want to take the next step. We need to want to do something. And so Sundari actually represents that divine will for creation to start. And in us, she represents that desire for wanting to do something. And and so the next one, Bhuvaneshwari, represents space cosmically. That space in which creation occurs. So, you know, space limits us and limits creation. So she represents that kind of limitation, but she also represents the knowledge that we need. So will alone is not enough, right, if we want to do something. So if I want to make a call to you. But just having the desire to call you is not going to be enough. I also need the knowledge of your number and what I'm going to say, right? So in any activity, we need will, knowledge, and action. So that knowledge is represented by Bhuvaneshwari, the fourth Mahavidya. And so the fifth Mahavidya is Bhairavi. She is the power of action. So, you know, you have the divine will, you have the divine knowledge, but then you need to, both of those need to be combined into actually acting. You need to be able to act. And so that she represents the actual action of the divine to create. And in us, she represents that, you know, determination, that want. See, the problem that many of us have is we want to do something. We also have the knowledge to do it, but we can't get over our inertia. You know, we keep putting it off, procrastinate, or, oh, I don't feel like doing it, or I want to do it, but I, you know, that inertia is that darkness that descends on us where we simply can't move. You know, how many people do you know who know that they need to lose weight, that they need to exercise, that they need to start improving their diet, or whatever it may be? And that inertia is actually Bhairavi's shadow. And so when we invoke her in our path, then suddenly, you know, we are given this, the power of action to convert the will and knowledge into action. So she is the, you know, she is the power to do that. The next one in the series.
Well, can I ask you a question real quick about that? Would the, the inertia be the same as depression? Would the energy be the same?
Yeah, it can be in its extreme. Absolutely. That can be there. But a lot of times, you know, we don't even have to be clinically depressed in order to just walk around, you know, with this heaviness and inability to act on what we know we must do. So, so she actually represents that whole spectrum of that inertia.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So the next one is called Chinnamasen. Actually, if you think Kali is fierce, you should look at her imagery because it's really fierce. So she is this goddess that has her head, she has cut off her own head, and she's holding her head in one hand. And, you know, there's blood spurting from her neck. And one of those streams of blood goes into her own mouth, which is in her hand. And then there are two attendants of her attendants who are standing next to her, and they are getting the other two streams of her life blood. And then they are, the three of them are standing upon a couple. And it's very, you know, all of these imagery, all of this imagery that we see in Hinduism, in Tantra, or in any of our Hindu symbols, they represent very specific things within us. So they're not some kind of, you know, and people look at that and say, oh my God, that's like devil worship or pagan or whatever it is. But actually, they have very deep symbolism. So here, Chinnamasta is actually representing the power of the divine to become so involved. So I told you that Shakti becomes us, right? She creates us and she becomes us. But that forgetfulness, you know, where the divine beheads itself to become us, where we forget our true nature so we can, you know, become totally involved in this drama of life and not really know that this is just a play. And this was, you know, this is not really to be taken seriously. We don't have that illusion, that knowledge, because, and that kind of beheading of the divine, the self-beheading of the divine is represented by Chinnamasta. And so it's almost like, you know, the divine becomes creation and then cuts itself off, seemingly, and so in this process of this self-discovery, we have to, it's almost like finding something that we had lost, but actually when we find it, we discover that it was never lost. It was, we were always home. So that is the cosmic power of Chinnamasta. And, you know, okay. her symbolism of standing on the couple shows our addiction to our senses. You know, we are so addicted to our senses that we are unable to control our senses. And how, you know, like this, our relationship with procreation, one way or the other, is so messed up. You know, in either, in all the, of course, now you see this coming out in the open, right? With all the Me Too stories and the story after story after story of sexual assault on women, and how it's been, you know, how deluded people can be that they can do this to other human beings. And that is you know, we may think of it as evil, but it's actually that the divine deluding us by this beheading, you know, where if we cannot realize our own true divine nature, we can't realize it in somebody else. And so this pain that we inflict upon each other, you know, men inflict on women, which is the most common scenario, is this power of Chinnamasta, the shadow of Chinnamasta, this addiction to that kind of gratification. And so that is her great shadow, which is, along with Kali's shadow of violence, is kind of taking us by storm, isn't it, in the current age. So, the next of the series after Chinnamasta is Dhumavati. And and if you look at her iconography, you know, she is this very, very emaciated kind of goddess. And anybody who has an idea of what the goddess must look like should take a look at what Dhumavati looks like, because she looks like nothing that we have seen. Yes. Yeah, exactly, because she is like the crone, you know. She's like a widow because she has swallowed Shiva, and, you know, she represents the great void, this great nothingness out of which all of creation arises. And this, prior to creation, there is absolutely nothing. And that nothingness is something that all of us who delve deep into the spiritual path are going to experience at one time or other. That is the dark night of the soul, and that is the dark periods of darkness that we all go through, and that is represented by Dhumavati. And her shadow is one of ignorance. And ignorance here only means being ignorant of who we really are, you know, our divine nature. And so that is her great shadow. And but, you know, these up to Dhumavati, these first seven goddesses, there's a particular linear kind of a sequential path where once we open to Dhumavati's light, then our whole spiritual journey takes a huge turn, because that's when we have opened our eyes and we have seen that we are not who we had thought we were. And then the last three goddesses are really bringing that home in different ways. So the next one is actually Bagalamukhi. And she represents the power of silence or stillness. So between one moment and the next moment, there is a short gap. Between one thought and another thought, there is a still, you know, there is a short gap of stillness. You know, between one action and another, there is a short gap of stillness. If we are still enough, we'll find it. And she represents that gap. Because only when you have that gap can we determine which way we're going to go. you know, so if it's all rolling without a stop, then it almost seems like everything is predestined, like there is no choice between one moment and the other. But in every moment, you know, in that still gap, the consequence can go either way. The consequence of the action can go one way or it can go another way if there is enough stillness and if that's cultivated. So that stillness is what is represented by Baglamukhi. And she is, her great shadow is what we were talking about earlier, which is clutter. You know, not knowing what we want, not knowing what to think, constantly thinking, conflicting thoughts, conflicting ideas, conflicting concepts and beliefs, all of that, a clutter is her shadow. And her light, of course, is clarity and stillness. So that's Baglamukhi. The ninth Mahavidya is Matangi, one of my favorites. And she represents the power of expression. Because now you have, you know, Tara, for instance, was the primordial vibration. But that vibration becomes reflected in us, in our ability, in our language ability. And when we say language, you know, it doesn't only represent the spoken word, but it's also the thinking word. The perception. So we look at an object and we call it something. So I look at, you know, an object and say, that's a tree. But actually, it isn't a tree. A tree is just a word that doesn't really touch that object. That object actually has no name. But you see, as soon as we say tree, we have lost the ability to appreciate that object without any of its labels. So that the power of expression to trap us into limitation is her great shadow, Matangi's great shadow, which all of us are universally afflicted by. You know, as soon as I call myself Kavita, or you call yourself Monique, then somehow we become that, when actually that's not who we are. It's just
who we are,
right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. So that is Matangi. And the final or the 10th Mahavidya is Kamalatmika. And if you look at the 10 Mahavidyas, you know, the picture of Kali on one end, and if you look at Kamalatmika on the other end, they are polar opposites. Kali is chaotic and wild, whereas Kamalatmika is harmonious, and she, you know, she's this beautiful goddess and very serene, and she represents bliss, the bliss that underlies all of creation. Whether we, you know, realize it or not, bliss is what permeates our senses, it's what permeates our day-to-day living, it permeates our lives and the lives of everybody, even when we think we are suffering and not experiencing it, because she actually masks it. Her shadow is one of conflict. Conflict always masks underlying bliss, but her cosmic force is one of bliss. And when we realize her, or we actually find her in our own spiritual journey, the conflict comes to an end, and what we find is this deep contentment in every given moment, and that's her gift or her light. So these 10 Mahavidyas, you know, people can work on any one and work with one, and then one, that's enough, because one goddess will lead to all the others, or work with them sequentially, which is how I've described them in the book.
Okay. Well, you've given us great information. Thank you so much, because you've given me much greater clarity between what you said today and reading the book on Kali. Because, like I said, when that client said, you know, you remind me of Kali, Mom, I'm like, huh? You know, and I wasn't taking it kindly. So now I understand, you know, both the shadow and the light. So thank you so much
You're welcome.
Explaining that to us. Folks, we're speaking with Dr. Kavita Shanayan, and she's the author of Shakti Rising, Embracing Shadow and Light on the Goddess Path to Wholeness. And you can check her out at her website, kavitamd.com. Kavita, when we go to your website, what are people going to find there?
So on my website is my meditation course. You know, a lot of people, hundreds of people from all over the world have signed up for it. And there's a lot of support for the meditation, lots of material, and we have a call once a month on full moon days. We have a live call. And so that's the meditation course. I also have a very active and updated blog where I write about various things, health, goddess, you know, tantra, yoga, all kinds of things. And there is also my gut quiz, which is the Blissful Gut Quiz, so that, you know, that is like an Ayurvedic diagnosis based on a quiz of what any given person may be afflicted by in terms of Ayurvedic you know, issues. And then I once they complete the quiz, then they get a personalized prescription with an 50-page ebook containing recipes and explanation of what to do and for their particular disorder. So there's that, and then announcements, and you know, I have a course coming up starting March 1st based on the book. It's the Shakti Rising online study course, and that's a 12-week course starting March 1st, which is going to be a deep dive into all of these concepts and the 10 Mahavidyas. And then other courses that I conduct, or workshops or retreats, all of those, all of that information can be found on the website.
Okay, great. And again, that's kavitamd.com, kavitamd.com. Kavita, we're at the end of our time together. I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you this evening. What pearls of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience now?
Make time for stillness. That would be my first recommendation. Make time every day to be still. And pick up a practice. Take up a technique. It doesn't matter what it is. Take up a meditation practice. Do it. And explore, you know, your own mind. Because this is a very precious time we have. This life is very short, and we have very limited time for self-discovery.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, folks, there you have it. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Kavita Shanayan. The book is Shakti Rising, Embracing Shadow and Light on the Goddess Path to Wholeness. You can get it anywhere. If you walk into the bookstore, if you can actually find a physical bookstore and you don't have it there, just ask them to order it. It's the city that I live in, we literally have zero bookstores. It's like truly amazing. We went from six down to zero. Absolutely, truly amazing. But Kavita, thank you very much for being with me this evening. I greatly appreciate it. And thank you, the audience, for being with us tonight as we collectively get over and learn about Shakti Rising. The divine in me honors the divine in you. When you're ready for a more balanced life, give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of love. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.